Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. Before reciting this, can we say this together? I can't remember if you know it, right? You do it, okay. Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Naranaran Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. And this next translation is just verse 7, the verse before. By rendering service unto the pure... Oh, that's the wrong one. Sorry. All right, anyway. By rendering service unto the... Where? Yeah, thanks. By regular attendance on classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Okay, so divinity and divine service is the name of this chapter, chapter 2. There's a lot of very famous verses that if you become familiar with these verses in this chapter, you'll hear them throughout your life in Krishna consciousness. So if you have a tendency, a propensity, an inclination, a little teeny desire to learn verses, these verses are really, really good. Are we going to have this up here the whole time? Okay, all right. So we're on text 8. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vikshvakshena katashuya. Vishvakshena katasuya. Nopadayet yati ratim. Notpadayet rati. Sorry, it's one of those days. Nopadayet yadi ratim. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vikshvakshena katashuyaha. Nopadayet yati ratim. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Please chant. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vikshvakshena katasuya. No padayed yadi ratim. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vishvakshena katasuya. No padayed yadi ratim. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Dharma svanushtita pumsam. Vishvakshena katasuya. No padayed yadi ratim. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Dharma.
Dharma.
Occupation.
Occupation.
Svanushtita.
Svanushtita.
Executed in terms of one's own position. Pumsam.
Of humankind.
Vikshvakshena. The personality of Godhead. Plenary portion. Katasu. The message of. Ya. What is. Na. Not.
Utpadayet.
Does produce. Yadi. If. Ratim, attraction. Shrama, useless labor. Eva, only. He, certainly. Kevalam, entirely. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Let's say that together. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. So what does that mean to you? What does occupational duties mean? Whatever work we do, okay, great. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's some of it. Good. Okay, we'll go on. Purport. There are different occupational activities in terms of a man's different conceptions of life. To the gross materialist, so in this purport, Prabhupada's going to give different gradations of understandings, okay? So the gross materialist, who cannot see anything beyond the gross material body, there is nothing beyond the senses. Therefore, his occupational activities are limited to concentrated and extended selfishness. Now Prabhupada's going to explain what that means. Concentrated selfishness centers around personal body. That is, this is generally seen amongst lower animals. Extended selfishness is manifested in human society and centers around family, society, community, nation, and world with a view to gross bodily comfort. Okay, so what does this mean so far in different words than Prabhupada used here? What does it mean? Amrita Kaliji? Concentrated selfishness, I'm just telling the kitchen. Concentrated selfishness means I, me, and mine. It's concentrated around the own, our own body.
And extended selfishness
is even when we desire the pleasure of other people's bodies or minds or senses. That can go to our own family or our community, our country, our world. Yeah, so an extended selfishness is when we are concerned about other people's happiness, but usually it starts with our family and goes out from there. Our family, our community, our society, our college, our group, our this, our nation, or whatever. So what does Prabhupada say about the, what type of person is interested in those types of sense gratification? A gross, someone who doesn't see anything beyond the body. This is my body, this is who I am, so this is my family, I need to take care of that, and therefore, the occupation, the work that they do, is limited to that conception. That's their the body. If I satisfy my body, I'll be happy. Has anybody ever been able to do that? Not that I know of. But we keep trying. Okay, so that's the lowest level. The sense and joy. Someone who sees the body as the self and tries to satisfy the body and tries to satisfy the extended, his personal or her personal extended gratification, whether that is just the family or whether that's the helping the poor or helping the sick or whatever, you know, whatever their conception is of helping somebody, that's what they're interested in only. So above that, we're going to hear about the next one. Above these gross materialists are the mental speculators who hover aloft in mental spheres, and their occupational duties involve making poetry and philosophy and propagating some ism with the same aim of selfishness limited to the body and the mind. What's the difference that Prabhupada's saying? There's a subtle difference there between a gross materialist and a mental speculator. Clayton. Exactly. Their activities are still on the same, based on the same thing, but they're a little more subtle. Their aim is still the same, selfish sense gratification, but the way that they do it is a little more subtle on the mental plane. Poetry, philosophy, this ism or that ism. Okay, but still, same goal, satisfying the senses. So it might appear more lofty, and in one sense it is more lofty, but it's not, because it's same goal, gratify the senses. How to be happy in the material world. We don't see that there's something else beyond that. But above the body and the mind, so here Prabhupada's bringing home the point. Above the body and the mind is the dormant spirit soul, whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Okay, can we have a translation of that verse from some different participants? What does that, those few sentences mean in our own words? These three sentences that I just read. Above the body and mind is a dormant spirit soul whose absence from the body makes the whole range of bodily and mental selfishness completely null and void. But less intelligent people have no information of the needs of the spirit soul. Andrea G. Well, what you're saying is true, but there's a little more direct what Prabhupada says there. Shruti Sarga. Exactly. Prabhupada's pointing out there that the body is totally useless without the soul. Yes, and he's going to give a nice analogy there. If we don't feed the source, you're never going to be happy, because what's actually driving the body is the presence of the soul. Without the presence of the soul in the body, all your mental activities and all your physical activities are, you know, they're finished. But if we don't, this is the gross misconception that's there. People try to satisfy the mind and the body through material means. It's never, ever, never, 100% guaranteed, never going to work. Because the body's just the vehicle. The real thing is the soul that drives the vehicle. Prabhupada's going to give a nice analogy pretty soon, I think, about the bird. Okay, it's the next paragraph, about the bird in the cage. Okay. Because foolish people have no information of the soul and how it is beyond the purview of the body and mind, they are not satisfied in the performance of their occupational duties. They have no information of the soul, so therefore they're performing their bodily activities, but there's what? There's, Prabhupada says in the introduction to Bhagavatam, that there's a pinprick. There's a dissatisfaction. I'm doing all of my work as to my best ability, trying to support my family, do this, do that, and I'm successful or not successful in so many ways, but still I'm not satisfied with that. People don't see that, because that's not the source of pleasure by satisfying the body. It's the soul inside. We have to make a conscious endeavor to understand that the different from the body is the soul, and by satisfying the needs of the soul, then the needs of the body follow. The happiness of the body follows. We have it backwards. We think that if we satisfy our body, then we'll be happy. But it's not true. If we satisfy the soul, the needs of the soul, then we can be happy and satisfied in whatever situation we're in. Prabhupada continues, the question of the satisfaction of the self is raised herein. The self is beyond the gross body and subtle mind. He is the potent, active principle of the body and mind. Without knowing the need of the dormant soul, one cannot be happy simply within the emolument of the body and mind. The body and mind are but superfluous outer coverings of the spirit soul. Well, isn't that amazing? The body and mind are superfluous. Now, that is not our normal conception, is it? But here's Prabhupada saying, the body and the mind are superfluous outer coverings for the spirit soul. So that's why in the previous sentence, he talked about the dormant soul. The soul's dormant because it's in a dormant state because we haven't brought it out to be the center of activities. Okay. The spirit soul's needs must be fulfilled. And here's this nice example, very simple example, often overlooked, but very clearly explains the point. Simply by cleansing the cage of the bird, one does not satisfy the bird. That's really graphic, isn't it? The little old lady's taking care of the bird in the bird cage, and she's just polishing away at the bird cage. And the bird's inside saying, give me some water, give me some seeds, give me something, give me some nourishment. Oh, let me polish, let me decorate, I'll put flowers, I'll do this, or that. And the bird's saying, forget it, I'm dying, I'm suffocating in here. Oh, my cage is so beautiful, oh, it's so young and fit, oh, my this and my that. And then then it like croaks, the bird does. Okay, one must actually know the needs of the bird himself. So very clear example. These examples that Prabhupada gives, they're not things that he made up. He didn't make up this example. This is a Vedic example. Since time immemorial, since the Vedas existed, somewhere in the vast conglomeration of Vedic literature, there's this example of the bird in the birdcage. Somewhere. And that's why it's so true. 500 years ago, it was a good example. 500 years from now, it'll be a good example. The need of the spirit. This part of the purport is really far out, okay? Focus in on this. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. So isn't that poetic? It's very poetic. We're going to do it again. The need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. Somehow when I read this section, these few sentences, I think of Narada Muni. Because Narada Muni, Prabhupada often calls him a transcendental spaceman. He can travel at will throughout the spiritual worlds and the material worlds. Because he's connected purely with the spirit, the Supreme Spirit, Sri Krishna. So therefore, he can go beyond the coverings of this universe. And Prabhupada says that opportunity is available for anyone, and then there's a process that one can achieve that. One has to connect with the Supreme Lord, and then there's a process on how to connect with the Supreme Lord. So here he's going to talk about how that dormant love for God is natural, and it's there within everyone's heart. So Srila Prabhupada says, there is a dormant affection for God within everyone. spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the forms of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Can someone translate that? I'm going to read it again. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Gopal. Good. Our relationships in this world are just reflections of the real relationships that are there in the spiritual world. Anyone else? Something, anything else on that point? Andrea? Same thing. We're trying to find happiness in material sense enjoyment instead of spiritual sense enjoyment. But Prabhupada says that desire to find happiness is the sign that the spirit soul is in there, stuck inside the body. Shruti Sargar? Because of the misconception, because we, when we come into the material world, misidentify ourselves, instead of thinking that I'm a spirit soul, we identify with this superfluous covering, and therefore we think that I'll get happiness through other... Right now, these are the only facilities that we have to act. So, what would you like to finish? How can we have access for spiritual knowledge and spiritual relationships? It's a good question. Kaylee? Amrita Kaylee? Okay, by beginning to use our body and mind in Krishna's service so we purify our existence, how do we begin? Or how is some way that, how is that started? Maria? Huh? Oh, excusez-moi, Olivia. Olivia, no wonder you didn't start to answer when I said that. Okay. Start by so how are we going to start? How you know, we're out there. How are you going to start? How are you going to... Prabhu. Yeah, that Prabhu. Just remind me what your name is, Prabhu. Zach. I'm Zach Prabhu. That's a good one. Stop taking it. So how are you going to do that? You're just going out there and then all of a sudden you're going to stop taking intoxication. You're going to regulate your senses. Shona? Okay, so that's great too. That's a really good answer. By associating with devotees. And how are you going to do that? Because you're just out there. You're out there in a cage that's really polished. And how are you going to just stop taking intoxication and do this and control your senses and associate with devotees? And how are we going to start? That's a good answer. By using our intelligence and figure out, hey, there's something wrong. I'm feeling a pinprick. Ambikaji. And yes, discuss it. That's a really good one. Disgusted. So we're disgusted and we're going to just sit in the corner. Good. Clayton.
The very first thing we can do is go to Krishna.
Very first thing is eat prasadam. Very good. And then what happens when you're at Krishna lunch? They said it on the wonderful video. Okay, I'm Rita Kaylee.
Well, I don't know about
somebody in the... Kitchen, can you tell us what you were saying? Because we can't hear it, but we think you have the answer. Oh, it's putting in the salt and the subject. You can't go. Okay. You go to chant. And if you're chanting, what else are you doing? Oh, thanks. You're hearing. Thank you. You got to hear. You got to have the opportunity to hear. We got to hear spiritual sound vibration. That starts with hearing. Or it can start in so many ways. It can start with prasadam. It can start with being disgusted. It can start with so many ways. But unless we hear spiritual information, then the whole thing starts to grow. It starts to all make so much sense. We might have a certain situation where all of a sudden everything that you put your faith in, you see it sort of dissolve in front of you. I was just listening the other day to NPR, and they were saying they were doing a story on the oil spill in the Gulf, the aftermath of the oil spill in the Gulf. So previously they had done a story on saying how everything was doing so nice and we've cleaned it up so well and everything's doing really good and come to the Gulf and swim in the Gulf. Then another story they were doing was what's really happening in the Gulf, and there was this one lady who had been she had been called in on the oil spill, the Valdez oil spill in Alaska. So she had worked there for years and years and years and saw the destruction of the ecosystem and this and that. And so then she participated in the Gulf oil, you know, the cleanup of this or that. And she compared the two. She said that the Gulf oil spill, you know, the Alaskan spill, the Valdez spill, compared to the Gulf spill was a cakewalk. It was nothing compared to the amount of oil. And anyway, she was given all this scientific information how the whole thing is just being covered up. It's just so covered up. But what I was hearing was a person who has studied this so much, was very familiar with all the effects of everything, and yet she was getting this total, she was running up this against this cement wall and seeing that all the people that she thought were going to protect the environment, the government, the this and that, were just covering it up. And it was becoming more and more clear to her that it was just a great massive cheating. So I was just hearing that, and I was thinking, you know, like her whole world is collapsing. Everything that she's put her faith in, very sincere. You can just see so many sincere students studying, you know, so many things with the aim of improving this and helping the that and helping the poor and finding the cure for the disease. And then as they go along in the quote-unquote real world, and they just see it's all based on money and sex and this and that and exploitation, and no one really, really wants to help anyone. They just want to make money for themselves. And your whole life just gets like broken. And I was thinking, oh, I wish I could just give her a Bhagavad Gita or let her hear the chanting. It's the perfect time when you meet some devastation like that sometimes, you know, if you get the opportunity to hear, you know, this is natural. This is material life. Everything you're putting your money in your bank account, and it's gradually getting bigger and bigger, and you're getting a little, you're making some progress, and you're feeling a little better about yourself, and then you realize you're putting your money in the wrong bank account. You put your money in the wrong bank account. You went to get your money the other day, and they said, oh, that's not your bank account. But I worked so hard. It's the wrong thing. So that's what Prabhupada's saying here to us. That's what the Vedic literature is saying here to us. Don't put your money in the wrong bank account. Don't think that you can just work. Come on in, you're welcome. Don't think that you can put your money in your endeavors, in your life, in just trying to satisfy your senses forever and ever. And ultimately, you're gonna just be happy and everything's going to be hunky-dory, sweet, fine, nectarino, peachy keen. Forget it. It ain't going to happen. Because why? Because the little dormant spirit soul that's so tiny and small that can't be seen even with the most powerful microscope, that's what's giving this body energy. That's the important spark of life in this body. And if that isn't satisfied by dovetailing some activities, spiritual activities, in relation to the Supreme Lord, understanding that that who we really are in relation to the Lord, that we have, you ready for this? Nothing to do with this material world. We have nothing to do with this material world. Like, isn't that dramatic? That's like a mind blower. We have nothing to do with this material body, mind, world, nothing. It's all a dream, and I'm not taking drugs. It's all an illusion. It's all an illusion. It's real. It's here, but it's not going to be here, and it's not the goal that we. But we somehow have got ourselves. We, not they, not them, not his fault, not that person's fault, not. We have gotten here by our own endeavor, and we've covered it. We've dug ourselves into this conception of this is who I am, and this is you know what I want to do, and I want to make a difference in life, and I wanted this, and I wanted that, and Harry Bowl, you know, oops, not Harry Bowl, but like Go Gators, and Harry, you know, like that, and let's conquer. Let's make some money. Let's enjoy. Let's be happy. No way. Sorry, I got a little distracted there. All right, here we go. Back to the purport. Therefore, let's go back a couple of sentences. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in the form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, here's the therefore. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. In other words, we have to do things that will bring about our spiritual reawakening. You can't be a butcher and think you'll make progress in spiritual life. You can't. That's a really gross example. Sorry, but you know, you all now aspiring devotees of the Lord, we all have a responsibility. How we're going to survive in this material world and survive in a way that's not going to karmically entangle us. And not only is it not going to karmically entangle us, but it's somehow or other we're going to be able to live simply enough or that we can keep our spiritual goals as a predominant motivating factor in life. If that's not number one on our consciousness, then the choices that we make are going to have great implications on our consciousness. The choices that we make in life have very big implications on what our consciousness is. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord. And any occupational activity, any job, any this, any that, which does not help one achieve attachment to hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead, is said herein to be simply a waste of time. What's the Sanskrit for that? Do you remember? Can you remember from the slok? Shrama eva hi kevalam. It's a good little section, if you don't remember the first part of the verse. Shrama, the last line. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Simply a waste of time. What's a waste of time? Could you say it a little louder? Oh, that's good. Putting money in the wrong bank account. What's a waste of time? Prabhupada said that sentence, that phrase is in. Yeah, to engage yourself in this material world thinking that you're going to get happiness and satisfaction. Good. It's just a waste of time. Where am I? This is because This is because other occupational duties, whatever ism they may belong to, cannot give liberation to the soul. Even the activities of the salvationists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. Prabhupada just speaks so poetically, no? So we'll find out what that means. We'll talk about that in a minute. Even the activities of the salvationalists are considered to be useless because of their failure to pick up the fountainhead of all liberties. In other words, there are people that engage in activities for liberation, mukti. Their conception is usually impersonal conception. And because they have failed to pick up the form of the personality of Godhead, who's the source of everything, they don't really get liberation. Even they might make so much advancement along their path and actually become free from the bodily concept of life and understand that they're spirit soul, but because they don't understand the position of the soul in relationship to Krishna, they don't really make very much progress. It's very difficult progress. And because they don't connect themselves to Krishna, their progress that they make to that certain level of realization, ultimately they fall down from because they haven't really gotten shelter. The gross materialist can practically see, this is a nice sentence too, the gross materialist can practically see that his material game is limited only to time and space, either in this world or in the other. Even if he goes up to Swargaloka, he will find no permanent abode for his hankering soul. The hankering soul must be satisfied by the perfect scientific process of perfect devotional service. So the gross materialist, they can, if they're even a little thoughtful, even this is a step for them. But a gross materialist, the progress that they make is limited. You know, they may get some money, they might have a comfortable situation for some time, even up to the point of death, and then at the time of death, they have to leave it all. All their hard labor to get the nice house, to get the nice family, to make this progress, to do that, to do what you always wanted to do. You leave it at the time of death, and you can't remember diddly squat about your previous life. Maybe somebody has a fleeting memory of something, but it's usually just a flash of a last life experience. Most people can't remember anything. So some people argue, since I can't remember anything, that means it didn't exist. What could a person possibly say to that argument? Since I can't remember that I didn't have a last life, I don't believe a word you're saying. Olivia? That's a good one. There's a lot in our past that we can't remember, even in this life, but that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Dwijimani? Good point. Sometimes in the point of stress, a scientist or someone would say, oh God, if you don't believe in God, why are you saying that? Good point. Zach? Yeah, good point. So Zach's going to prove it by saying, hey, I don't remember being born, so that means I was never born. Good point. You know, yeah, she remembers. That's true. But it's a good argument, or it's a good counter argument. We're thinking that I don't remember her, so it didn't happen. Or sometimes people say, if I can't remember the suffering in my past life, then it's not a problem. Right? I suffered, it's over, and now here I am again. What would a person say to that? A good point. Thanks, Kitchen. Jambavan, is that your name? What's your name? Oh, Badahari. Okay, Badahari. Yeah. Because you're in a material body, you're going to suffer again and again, repeated birth and death. So one time in a lecture, I think it was in Australia, Srila Prabhupada was making these similar points, you know, how we suffer so much. And one devotee said, well, one lady in the audience, I don't know, because I was just listening, I don't know if she was a devotee or a guest. Anyway, one lady in the audience said, well, if I can't remember the suffering, then, she said, if everyone is ultimately going to go back to Godhead in the end, ultimately everyone's going to go back in the end, then why do I have to make this special arrangement now? Why do I have to make the endeavor to go back now? And you could just, in Prabhupada, he just paused to try to let what she said sink into her own head, you know? And then he said, "Is that a very intelligent proposal?" Said, "You're going up the stairs to the building. You have an appointment on the 50th floor of a building. And you can walk up the stairs and get there when the office is closed and then walk down again. Is that a very intelligent proposal? Or you could take the elevator and get there and do your business and come down. Which would you prefer?" It's not a very it's not a very intelligent proposal. Let me just sit back. But there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that says, in this age of Kali, people are in that space. They're unlucky, they're lazy, they're misguided, they're disturbed. In the age of Kali, we are not so inclined to take up the disciplines of spiritual life. We're in an unfortunate position. So therefore, we really do have to immerse ourselves and in hearing and chanting. We really do need to insulate ourselves in good association. That's why, who was it? What was his name that said, "I like Krishna House because of all the awesome people that are there"? Michael. Yeah, you know, we need to associate with devotees who have similar aims in life, and therefore strengthen our determination. Otherwise, it's so easy to become distracted. The material world is expert. In fact, that's what her expertise is. Distracting the living entity from their real happiness. Distracting the living entity from their real good. So we have to try to focus. And how can we do that? Again, by the process. And many times Srila Prabhupada talks about how one who engages in devotional service, they achieve such high levels of realization. But many of us, we don't start off with high levels of realization. We start off on a lower platform. So we need to build up the strength, the determination, the realization, our realization. So that is done through this process of hearing and chanting, the process of sadhana bhakti, of practicing these very lofty practices, principles of devotional service, very lofty, chanting the holy name with concentration. Like some of you have probably chanted a few rounds already. Can you say that you chanted them with the utmost concentration and love? Oy, I have a few faint. No, but we tried. Maybe we did it for a few names of the Lord, a few times we could remember, oh yeah, I'm chanting. I'm really not supposed to be thinking what I'm doing today and what that person said to me yesterday, and that I have to go do my laundry, and I'm really a little hungry right now, but okay, whatever. So we have to practice. Oh, I heard it. Okay, I'm going to share this with you. I heard Radha Govinda Maharaj, a series of lectures on the Ajamil story. So Ajamil, very briefly, Ajamil, maybe you're familiar with the Ajamil story. Okay, so Ajamil, he's at the time of death, he's calling his son. There's his little, the Yamadutas, the ugly, fearful servants of Lord Yama, the Lord of Death, have come for him. It's his time to die. They've come to get him. He's on his deathbed. And there's his son playing on the floor nearby. So he calls his son, and his son's name happens to be Narayan, name of Krishna. So Narayan, he's calling, "Help, Narayan, help, Narayan, Narayan." And so when he calls the name of Narayan, the Vishnu Dutas come and release him from the ropes of the Yama Dutas. Then they have a discussion back and forth. The Yama Dutas can't understand why the Vishnu Dutas have released this person. He's very sinful. He led a very sinful life. Killing, gambling, this one, that. So many things. He did so many things. So why are they protecting him? The Vishnu Dutas are saying, here's the Vishnu Dutas, here's the Yama Dutas. The Vishnu Dutas are saying, but he chanted the name of Narayan. And the Yama Dutas say, but he didn't chant it thinking of God. He chanted calling his son. He chanted calling his son. And they said, that's not the name of his son. That's the Lord's name. He chanted the Lord's name. Therefore, he's released from your jurisdiction. And then Maharaj went on to say that he didn't even need to say the whole four syllables of Narayan. He could have just said Narai, because all you need to say is two syllables of the Lord. Hari, Narai. And the Lord, what happened was is that the Lord heard him chanting his name. So Maharaj was saying, sometimes when we chant, we think, oh, my mind is so difficult to control. I didn't hear anything. Oh, it's so hard, this and that. He said, go on chanting anyway. Keep chanting. Because why? Krishna's hearing. You call his name. And when he hears you call his name, then he thinks, I need to protect that person. So somehow, not by our own endeavor, not by our own achievement, somehow we've landed here. And we're very, very fortunate. We're all very, very fortunate to have come in contact with this information. By our endeavor, we didn't deserve it. But we've somehow achieved the opportunity to hear. So take the advantage of the opportunity that's given to us. It's a rare opportunity. 8,400,000 different species of life forms in this material world. And of all of them, going through all of them, evolving through all of them, the spirit soul finally gets to be trapped in a human body. We got the human form. Somehow or other, we've finally come to this human form of life. It's a huge journey. It's a long journey. 8,400,000. Now, someone could say, well, some of those lives were probably very quick. You know, the bugs live, the germs live very short. Some of them were probably pretty long. Trees, this, that. You could average and say, 8,400,000 years it took us to get here. Most likely, that's my speculation. Just in one time going through the human the cycle, right? So somehow we've got here. Try to take advantage by hearing and chanting, and whenever those moments of extreme sincerity come upon you, and you think, oh, I'm so fortunate. Then offer those prayers of gratitude to Krishna. Thank you, Krishna. Please help me. Please give me the opportunity to continue to associate with your devotees. Continue to take the opportunity to continue to hear and chant and take prasadam in the association. The Lord really hears those heartfelt prayers. It's not by our endeavor, but it's by the mercy of the devotees that we've been able to take advantage to get here. So make a few little prayers like that. And then all of these verses in the Bhagavatam, gradually, gradually, they'll light up your heart and consciousness. Okay, finished. Favorite prayer time. Oh, one. Okay, thanks. Sadidar avijajal jatendidar taikal.